Yo, 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 hey, 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 we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy, and yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. Wherever you are, wherever you're at, thank you for listening to your boy. So, guys, I gotta tell you, gotta be intentional and deliberate what we want to do in our life. So I'll say here, the goal of this podcast is twofold. One, I want to share my stories with my family and friends and people close to me. And secondly, get the attention of the people and organizations that will eventually help me share my stories with the world. And to do that, we got to stay consistent. So we will be bringing you stories every Wednesday, the Hump Day stories. And we got a part two today of a previous episode of Dialogue Heavy in Dive. In the first chapter, we got a young lady named Joni, right? Who is 28 and fed up with the world. She said, I am done with you guys. I am through with this world. You guys ain't got nothing to offer me. I ain't got nothing to learn. That's it. Kaput. And she explains to us that it's December 31st, 1999, the last day of the millennia. And she is going to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge at dusk, 6:47 p.m. to be exact. And before she does that, she's going to have a couple conversations. It's earlier in the day, obviously. And she's going to have a couple conversations with some people. And she decides to talk to her ex-boyfriend first, a gentleman named Nathan, who was with her for 8 years. And this is their first time seeing each other. And Nathan, the way that they broke up was brutal for anybody. Heartbreak hotel. I mean, he left her for her best friend, Mary. And it was pretty rough, but not exactly the conversation that Joni thought she was going to have with Mr. Nathan. She thought he was going to come there and apologize profusely, cry on her shoulder, say, take me back, and all of this. And it was none of that. Nathan basically told her the reason why that I couldn't be with you anymore was because not only were you not engaging and telling me of everything of your life, you smothered me. You wanted to know where I was at every time of every day, but you wouldn't even tell me about yourself. And he stuck in there for 8 years. So actually, Nathan is kind of a good guy besides the asshole move that he did at the end, no? That just lets you know that there's more, you know, elements to every equation than just the, you know, the brass facts. I'm not trying to give him an out for doing what he did, but, you know, it's pretty tough. So, she didn't get that conversation that she wanted. And the way that it ended was so violent that it just gave her the fuel and the affirmation she needed to think that she's doing the right thing today, which is not good. So she's going to go and have a conversation with her parents, the part of her life that she didn't share with Nathan. We're going to see what happened in that situation and what got her to the way that she was. And we'll see at the end what she decides to do with all that information. So I'll just bring it to you. This is a little bit more than last week's. I think it's about 10 pages. And we'll end it today on Dive. And then we'll just bring you a new story next week. And hopefully it'll be just as good, if not better. So here we go. Without further ado, I bring to you Chapter 2 of Dive. As you know, everything on the Dialogue Heavy podcast at this point has been written and recited by yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. So let's go. Chapter 2. My parents decided they were Splitsville 10 years ago today. And although committing my suicide on their anniversary seems like a big fuck you to them, it wasn't 100% intentional. They claimed it was for irreconcilable differences, but with my dad being the type of man he was, I just assumed he cheated. I mean, how else could two co-eds fall in love, get married, have kids, everything be pretty much perfect, then just one day say, hey guys, thanks for the memories, had a good time, it was all a fluke, now it's over. I mean, what the fuck? No warning, not even a warning sign of unhappiness, it was just, that's it. We fucked up the family. You young kids deal with it, and oh, by the way, go out into the world and make something of yourselves. Bullshit. I mean, Jonathan seemed to take it on the chin like a champ, but I was devastated. I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't talk. I was like a zombie walking around the house and I only left my room to bathe. It was my freshman year at the University of San Francisco. So when I went back after that Christmas break, I was in attendance, but I was never really there. And after two lackluster semesters, I flunked out. They called and tried to tell me what a big mistake I was making and how much I would regret it, but I didn't respect their opinion on my life after they ruined it, and soon I cut them off for good. Their only communication to me would be through my little brother and vice versa. And to be honest, the stuff I heard about made me sick anyway. Not only was these two idiots virtually had virtually no grieving period, but they both remarried in a year and still got along? Ridiculous. And it was disgusting. And I'm not even sure why I came, but maybe it's because something deep down in my heart just needs to know why before I die. And the thought of watching my holier-than-thou father squirm while he tries to explain how sticking his dick in another woman behind my mother's back was somehow right makes me laugh. Now, they say a little girl's first love is her father, and I have to admit I'm no different. Besides the fact that Anthony Jeffrey James was handsome alone, he could also wear the hell out of his dress blue uniform. He was 6'3", with sandy brown hair and ocean blue eyes. His smile could turn a dark spirit bright, and his hugs were of addictive nature. And then add wit and charm to all that, you had a superhuman in my book. And there was no girl in school who can tell me their daddy could compete with mine. My mother was my father's yang. Great as well, but more or less quiet and pensive. She was thin like a yogi, but super athletic. Beautiful red freckles and long brown hair that matched the runway model legs that cashed her ticket to the University of Santa Barbara in the high jump where she met the future love of her life. She lacked in areas my father relished in publicly, but if you ask me, she had the best talent a person could possess by making you feel like you were the only person in the world that mattered when she engaged with you. As I walk down my old block, the ghost of young Joni's past smacks me in the face. The same oak tree that I carved me and my first crush name into is still in front of Mr. Shuttlebrook's home, and the same cracked up pavement that I scraped my knee on 1,000 times is there too. Thinking of all the times me and Johnny ran, rollerbladed, and rode our bikes up and down this street makes me smile, and I won't lie, memory lane is feeling good right now. I know the conversation to come will suck, but I'm enjoying this unfamiliar feeling of happiness, and I know it'll be even better when I see my baby brother. Jonathan has to be the happiest gay man alive, the light of my life and the glue of this otherwise fragmented family, so he is the only one I worry about hurting when I take my leap of non-faith later. He took my dad's eyes and grew my mom's hair, but he stole parts of each of their personality. Annie was a dog in the sense of being a consummate sweetheart on the one hand, but could and would rip your head off if you mistook him for weak on the other. Joni's home! My brother yelled after he swung open the front door and squeezed me as tight as humanly possible. Daddy's here, and Mommy told him no newbies allowed, so don't worry. That's what he said. Of course she did, I thought. There's nobody on this planet who knows me better than my mother, and she's better than Napoleon at psychological warfare, so between not letting my step-parent, the step-parents I'll never have the pleasure of meeting come, and me smelling her beef brisket first thing through the door, she's already setting out her first peace offering. My mother decided to keep the family home after the separation, so the walls still paint the story of a happy family with pictures of Jonathan and me as babies, toothless school graders, and gothic teens. Team sport photos littered the hallways while the ones of family vacations to Disneyland, Japan, and Hawaii sit on the end tables and shelves. The nostalgia of it all brings a bit of light to the black hole inside of me. Mom! Joni's here! As we circle into the kitchen, something comes over me seeing my parents outside in the backyard. My dad is grilling meat like he used to, on the same grill that he used to, wearing the same type of clothes that he used to. And my mom is next to him, slapping his back off in a parent joke, waiting to take his meat offerings. They're talking, I thought. They're happy in each other's presence. What the hell is going on with these guys? Jonathan opens the patio door. Hello, Ren and Stimpy. I said Joni's home. Joni! The two say like Siamese twins with huge smiles and open arms. They rush me for a hug before I can fully process the scenario. You'd think that there would be some awkwardness between us considering that I've been gone a third of my life, but there was none coming from them, and ironically, that pisses me off. How are you, baby? My dad says. Good, We missed you so much, my mom says. Me too. I don't know much else to say at the moment. And my mom can smell the harbored resentment on me better than those beautifully grilled sausages. Joni, why don't you and Johnny set the table and Daddy and I will bring in everything in just a second. I set the table an hour ago, my brother says, when you said the food would be ready. Great, my mom says. Since you're so good at doing what you're told, go inside and entertain your sister until we're done. Mom stare included. Johnny rolls his eyes and yanks at my wrist. All right, but hurry up, I'm starving. Once inside, Johnny sits me down, then moseys over to the hookah-themed bar that is the only thing new in the house since my departure. Weird, huh? He says, while putting two glasses on the counter. If Steve and I ever broke up, not that we ever will, I can only hope that we'd be that mature. He cracks open a bottle of Kettle One and fills them each halfway. Yeah, I say. Pineapple and orange juice are tossed into a blender with ice and poured into the vodka glasses, and he slides one over to me. But it would never happen, Johnny says. I'd kill him first. I force a smile overlooking the glass. It's genuine, though, Johnny says. I cough hard off the adult version Slurpee. What? I say. They're strong, huh? Yeah. I said, it seems genuine, Mom and Dad. I don't think anyone could keep that act up if it wasn't. Jonathan reaches over to clink glasses in a chair, but I'm still bewildered by watching my mom with her head on my dad's shoulder and him turn steaks in between puffs of his cigar. Before I can answer back to my brother, the two ex-lovers come waltzing in with a tray of assorted meats, and I realize now that I'm hungry too. Joni, my dad says, I was telling your mother about the time you fell out the passenger side of the car when you were two, and how I was more scared of her finding out than you getting hurt. Was that supposed to make me laugh about earlier? Was that what they were laughing about earlier, I thought? My mom pinches him. And I just told him, had you been hurt, he had all the reason to be scared. Who doesn't strap their child in a seat made for babies? We're going down the block to Debbie's, my dad says. A block away? My mom says, raising her hand to smack him upside his head. My father sits in his usual chair at the head of the table with my mother and brother on the sides and me at the bottom. Everything on the table looks delicious. Piping hot beef brisket, grilled links with buttered corn, and my favorite cheesy chived mashed potatoes. And I realize that if with my flight time being in 90 minutes or so, this is going to be my last meal. My mom slices off both corner pieces off the brisket for me and puts them on my plate. We are so excited when Johnny told us that you wanted to come tonight. Really? I say, with my mouth full of beef. Yes, really, my father says. Lord knows I tried to kill him for not telling us your whereabouts. And I'll tell you something else. My dad points his steak knife at Johnny while keeping his eyes on me. There's soldiers in the military that couldn't stand up to that level of pressure me and your mother put him through. To find you, little bastard. My heart warms as I look over to my brother who winks at me after taking a drink. My mother laughs. Stop it, Anthony. He thought he was protecting your sister. I know, my dad says. It's just the world is so big and so much has happened. So much has happened. Don't overwhelm her, Anthony. He's not, Mom, I say. I'm okay. I guess Shit, I thought. I don't know what else to say. I didn't prepare for a speech. The only thought in my head was to tell them to go to hell. But now that I'm here, the warmth of the hugs, the genuineness of the smiles, not to mention the food, has just kind of disarmed me. Was this what I was missing? Thinking I could take the world on by myself? Before I know it, I'm crying into my mashed potatoes, and my mother's by my side rubbing my back like she did the night I came home early from prom after my date left me stag at the table and danced the night away with Mackenzie McEnroe. Honey, everything is going to be all right. It's been so hard without you guys, I say between sobs. My mother picks up my sorry excuse for her face, and I can barely see her through watery eyes. She wipes my tears away. You never have to be without us again. I clear my throat, and my vision clears as well. And the same face that used to bring me back from any sickness, heartbreak, or pain stares at me, but all I can see is red. And all I can feel is rage for her and my father. And as much as I want to be here in the present, the past has rendered me incompetent in forgiveness at the moment. I push her away, then run out the kitchen, up the stairs, and into the door that led to my bedroom. But when I do, everything has changed. Where there was a single bed, now there are bunk beds. Where there was a poster of peace signs and geographical maps, there are now posters of giant steroid-laden men in Speedos. Where there was a desk and a computer, now there are Legos sets full of miniature cities equipped with skyscrapers, parks, and little coffee shops like the one I was in earlier with Nathan. I wish I could disappear into that fucking Legoland set and get away from here, but that wasn't reality. Reality was chasing me up the stairs. Joni, my mom says, can I come in? She asks, but it wasn't a question. She sits down next to me on the lower level bunk. You know what? What? Do you know what? I didn't answer. I was busy trying to get my temper back down from serial killer to school teacher. I've actually dreaded this day for a while now, my mom says. What? Of course I love you, and I've missed you so much, but after so long without seeing you, I was just content with John telling us you were okay. Sorry to be a pariah at your doorstep, I say. She takes a long, labored breath. I was just afraid of this moment. Having to explain to you where your father and I failed you and your brother, going back to the darkness. I know it's a selfish thing to feel, but I just don't want to hurt anymore. That is selfish. I say, I do deserve an explanation, you know. My mom nods her head in a slow, deliberate fashion, as a person on trial would before confessing a secret that they meant to take to the grave. I left your father for a student of mine. What? I say, and as I jump up, I crack my head on the bottom of the upper bunk, and blackness is all I can see. I hear a familiar voice call my name. Joni! 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 Was that Nathan? When I come to, I'm running on the pathway to Golden Gate Bridge. I'm not even out of breath, which is weird because I haven't worked out in years. The Great Pacific is to my right, shimmering and waiting for me like a warm hug. And the jump point I previously scouted isn't much further. Behind me is Nathan running, but the stuffed suitcase in his hand is keeping him from catching up. I'm sifting through people walking for leisure, and when I bump into a tall man in khakis standing in place, he doesn't say a word. Although I damn near knock him to the ground. Sorry, I say. But he's distracted by something in the sky. I follow his gaze into the clouds, which are dark and ominous. I look back and Nathan is no longer chasing me. When I look forward, there is a barrier with caution signs and flashing lights, and my heart sinks at the thought of not making my jump time. I look towards the ocean and the sun is dipping into the horizon. I panic and look across the bridge to the opposite side and feel relief when I see the sun coming up on that side. I run across the street, desperate to end it all. The sun is welcoming, almost smiling at me. I climb over the median, and as I do, the huge red bars of the bridge disintegrate just enough to make a platform for me to project from. I feel the corners of my mouth curve into the smile that matched the feeling in my heart. My end is just steps away. I feel no more pain, no more responsibility, no more betrayal, but I do hear a loud horn disrupting my euphoria. When I look to the right, headlights come to me so bright that might cover my eyes, and the next thing I hear is, Joni! When I come to, my dad is in my face with a flashlight. My 2020 returns, and all the people I have left in the world to love are staring down at me in genuine concern. The throbbing pain in my head has moved in and kicked out the anger. Fuck, I say aloud. My brother laughs and my mom slaps him, although she smiles after seeing my dad pick me up and sit me on the tiny red plastic chair usually used for a preschool. Are you okay, Joni? My mom says. I'm fine, I say, shooting the death stare at her, and my anger is returning, although I'm not sure if it's from her confession or the pain pulsing over and over in my skull. What happened? Jonathan asks. I look over at my mom with an ice pack on my head and my dad that my dad just gave me. My mom looks embarrassed. I told her. Jonathan and my dad take deep breaths, then sit on the bunks. Jesus, honey, I'm sorry, my dad says. It's not your fault, it's hers. Well, she's a lying, cheating bitch, hey! my dad says, don't. And his voice is so commanding that even in my anger, he has my full attention. Why? I say, confused. Because I said so. I don't have to take this shit. I'm a grown woman. I can leave whenever I want. I get up and walk to the door, but my brother beats me to it. Move, John! I yell at him face to face. He puts his hand out to block me. No, Joni. Move! No, Jonathan says. This ends today. You're fucking right it does, I say. What's that supposed to mean? I try to pry his arms away from the door while my mom cries just off to the right of him. I shove Johnny in the chest and his back hits the door. Then I shove him again and he won't budge. Move, you fucking faggot! Shit, I didn't mean that, but before I can apologize... Bitch! Jonathan screams, hey! My dad says, and he separates the two of us. Great, I thought. Now I have a knot on my head and a red handprint across my face. I thought this trip would be more a mental struggle than a physical one. All right, that's enough! Everyone just sit down. Jonathan, sit over there with your mother. And Joni, I said I'm leaving. Fine, just go, Joni. I open the door. But if this is the last time we see you, my dad says, wouldn't you want to know the whole truth before it's over? Before it's over, I thought. I didn't say anything while I was knocked out, right? I turn around and look at them. My mother was still sobbing. Jonathan was beet red with his arms crossed, and my dad's carotid artery was protruding from his neck. Whatever, I say. The only defining thing I decide I could do at the moment was not sit down. So I walk over to my windowsill and turn away. I won't even give him the satisfaction of seeing my face. Fuck them all. I have cancer, Johnny, my father says, and the shock turns me around in an instant. He can see my face, and even though even through the swelling that I'm in shock. Take it easy, honey. It's in remission. Has been for a long time. But that's what I'm saying. You don't know everything. How long? I say. Since Johnny was 2. What? Why? How could you not tell me? Tell us. How do you tell anybody you have cancer? My dad says. And kids? Forget it. You are 8. We couldn't expect you guys to grow up happy and whole if you thought that your dad could die any second. We couldn't drag you guys. We dragged you guys. Mother and I just... Me and your mother decided we would just continue to give you guys the best life we could provide and not riddle you guys with doctor's appointments and treatments and all that misery. I look over at my mom who's laying in Jonathan's lap. Just looking at her makes me sick. And we weren't going to drag you and your brother to all those chemo treatments, my dad says. Torment you two with appointment after appointment, so we decided... We'll keep it in the dark, give you guys the best life we possibly could, while we could. So mom leaves you for a co-ed on your deathbed, I say. No, if you would just listen, I fold my eyes. I fold my arms. You remember that time I couldn't make it to your volleyball state championship game because I was stationed in Guam? Yeah, so? Well, obviously I wasn't in there. I wasn't there. And the oncologist told us to make future plans. Sorry, guys. Well, obviously, I wasn't. I was at the oncologist, and he told us to make future plans. You know, like will, insurance policy, burials, plots, that sort of stuff. And I was scared. I told your mother she had to let me go. And she does just like that? Of course not, my dad says. She was at every appointment, every chemotherapy session, all the while coming home, taking care of everything you guys needed, and crying herself to sleep every night, I'm sure. Johnny rubs my mom's back, and I don't know what to do or think anymore. I told her she had to find someone to take my place. I had been a shell of myself for years, and you two needed someone you can depend on. But you got better, I said. By then, it was already too late. She had fallen in love with Gerald, a graduate student at her university. We tried to rekindle what we had before. She left him. I came home. You guys never knew. It was perfect. But for her... Her heart was elsewhere. I was bitter too, and I fought for her. I made some serious problems for them in the beginning, but as time went on, even I can see it was a winless battle for me. And had she stayed with me, it would have been an unfulfilled existence for her. I had to let my best friend go. After that, cancer was a cakewalk. I put my head down in shame, and I wasn't sure if it was because of how I chastised my mother earlier or the sheer embarrassment of our family fuck up. I mean, why did this happen? Why did this have to happen to us? Why did a beautiful, healthy man like my father have to get cancer? Why did he tell my mother to give up on him and let him die? Why do we even exist? If everything after birth is pain, what's the fucking point? What's the fucking point? I scream. Of what, honey? Of this. Why are we here? Because we're family, my dad says. Not anymore. We spent all those years together to what? End up like this? Alone? You're not alone, Jonathan says. You want to be, but you're not. Yeah, mom and dad are not together. Shit, I'm gay. Do you know how hard that is? You pick up the pieces and you fucking move on, Joni. Who was there for you when Nathan broke your heart? My parents look at each other with wide eyes, and I know now that Jonathan's word when it came to my personal life has always stayed true. I cried with you. I laughed with you. I stalked him with you. Does that not mean anything? No, you're right, I say. Then, they deserve to be happy, Joni. You deserve to be happy. I deserve to be happy, no matter how the circumstances turn out. Tears drop onto my jeans and I nod, although I'm not clear why. By the way, Johnny says, who the hell told you every element of life had to be explained? We sit in silence so long that the water stain on my pants disappears. And when I look up to meet Jonathan's eyes, I can't help to see the only artifact in the room that still is mine. A Stranger Things clock that Jonathan bought me for Christmas before I left for college. It's 6:53 p.m. I'm supposed to be dead by now. As I lay in the bed of my apartment staring up at the ceiling, I can't help but to think of the day's activities. The Nathan conversation seems now like 10 years ago, but still prevalent. I know now that I carried the baggage from my family's failings into our relationship, and in fear of losing him, I overcompensated and did exactly what I was trying to avoid. I'd run away from my family to avoid the hardships that most people endure every day. But why? What is it inside of me that would rather live a life of solitude than deal with people that don't view life in the same way that I do? Or worse, not live at all? I liked life, didn't I? I turn over and look out the window at the Golden Gate Bridge all lit up and bright. Was that still the answer? It definitely doesn't have the same allure it did earlier. There was multiple things I loved about this my existence. I did love my family. I did at one time love Nathan. I loved sex. I loved food. I loved working. So if I love so much, why'd I want to end it all? At 28, I still had some things to share, and I still had time to find a way to be content. Although I never paid them any mind, I got hit on at work by the same men that claimed to be Nathan's friends. I had the presence of mind, even in the darkness, not to dive into liquor and hard drugs. People listened to me and told me on multiple occasions that I was of deep thought. I had a lot to offer, more than what that anchor would have said of me on the evening news for sure. So what things didn't go my way today? Isn't that most days? On Tuesday, I ordered Kung Pao chicken and received sweet and sour pork. Now I love sweet and sour pork. Nathan asked me if I was okay when I was crying in the break room after being rejected by the French kid from Human Resources. And he was my first love. My mother found the love of her life while losing the love of her life. I still don't know why I'm here or where I'm going when this is all over, but does it matter? I don't know. I don't have to know all the answers, and I'm sure I wouldn't be satisfied if I did. In my dream, the sun went down on one side of the bridge, and when I looked to the other side, it was rising again. Was my subconscious willing me to run towards my death or towards my future? Because I could find another job. Shit, I could find someone else to love. But what I can't find is another life. And in all honesty, I don't want a different one. And boom! There you go, dive, y'all. Beep, 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 beep. What you guys think? Big Joni, all grown up, all in one day. What we can learn, right? Crazy stuff. In all honesty, I don't know where all this stuff comes from, man. I just write and write and write, and I just let it come to me, and it comes and it goes, and it comes and it goes. It's a lot of work, though. This actually took me, it's going to be interesting on next week's story, because this one actually took me longer than a week to write. I had wrote the first draft, but going back and trying to fix errors and trying to fix certain things about it and what I wanted to say and leading up until today was well over a week. I wasn't working on it consistently to make it, you know, that much. But in order to get these stories to get to the level I'm hoping to get my stories to, I'm going to have to work diligently every week to get one story out per week, or at least part of a story out per week. So, yeah, man, I hope you liked it. Hope that you loved it. And if you didn't, I hope you at least listened and learned something from it. That is Dive. That is Miss Joni telling her story. And I'll tell you, I'll give you a little insight. I'll give you an alternate ending. So I wanted to give Joni, my initial thought was her actually accomplishing her goal. But in a strange way, I wanted her to come to all this reckoning, what she did in that last chapter, realize the fault of her ways, realize that she wanted to be here, realize that she wanted to be happy, and that, you know, life just happens and you got to keep on rolling with the punches. And maybe the next day, going to the bridge and not falling off or anything like that, but in her attempt to go try to reflect about those things the next day, like get hit by a car or something. And it, you know, like be one of those things where it's like, okay, well, you guessed it, you wanted it, you put all that universal energy into it. And although you learned your lesson before you learned your lesson, because you put this out into the universe, this is still going to happen to you. That would have sucked. You know what I mean? That would have been really, really bad. But I had a friend of mine who kind of convinced me that she wanted the story to... I have a few friends that I let listen to the stuff, or at least read the stuff, or I tell about on my way of writing. And I told her that ending before I even finished writing the first draft. And she was like, how about you have a happy ending for once? So I'm a drama writer, so I don't know really much else to do, you know. But anyway, I'll get out of you guys' hair. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Dialogue Heavy, and in particular, Joni's journey. Hopefully you can take something from it. Maybe if you're feeling any way about situations like this or have in the past and, you know, and stuff like that, maybe you connect with Joni on certain ways. I know we all go through hardships. And we all go through things, maybe not, you know, going to the point of planning and doing all the stuff that Joni did, but we all have tremendous hardships that makes us think that that's probably that can be an option or something like that. And that's never an option. You know, you always got friends and family that you can talk to. I know there's, you know, suicide lines and stuff like that. I'm not an advocate for that. I don't know how to, you know, talk about that or anything. I don't have any experience in that, but yeah, man, talking helps. So talk to people, man. If you got problems, you got issues and stuff, find somebody you can talk to. If you feel like your family and friends are biased and stuff like that, they're only going to tell you what you want to hear and not give you the hard truth or whatever, you know, go to an unbiased person, therapy and all that other stuff. It works. So, all right, man. Well, you guys take it easy. Take care of yourselves and stuff. And I'll catch you next week on another episode of Dialogue Heavy with your boy, Michael Anthony McMillan. I'll holler at you later. Peace. I'm out of here.